Well, boys and girls, we've got a lot of truckers stop in here at Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, and they like trucker music, trucker sound, so we're going to play one for you. But Dave Dudley here, 6 days on the road for all our 18-wheeler friends. Yeah, how about that? Here we go. Whoa, what happened? Do it again. Come on, Dave.
Well, I pulled out of Pittsburgh, rolling down the eastern seaboard. I got my keys all wound up, and she's running like I never before. There's a speed going ahead, all right. I don't see a car in sight. 6 days on the road, and I'm gonna make it home tonight. I got a tip in 4 gears and a Georgian overdrive. I'm taking little white pills and my eyes are open wide. I just passed the Jimmy and a white. I've been passing everything in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. Well, it seems like a month since I kissed my baby goodbye. I could have a lot of women, but I'm not like some other guy. I could find one to hold me tight, but I can never make believe it's all right. 6 days on the road, and I'm gonna make it home tonight. Well, ICC is checking on down the line. I'm a little overweight and the logs are way behind. But nothing bothers me tonight. I can dodge all the scales, alright. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. Well, my rig's a little old, but that don't mean she's slow. There's a flame from her stack and the smoke's rolling the blackest coal. My hometowns are coming in sight. And if you think I'm happy, you're right. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight.
Yeah, we like to keep the truckers happy because in any breakdown or any decision to strike back at the system, we're going to need all the truckers and all the heavy equipment people we can get. And let your imagination be your guide, baby. This is White Aryan Resistance, White Aryan Resistance Radio, right here in north central Indiana on a nice day. Cool days, about, what was it this morning, 19 degrees or something like that. The frost was definitely on the pumpkin, and we still got about, it's snowing on and off. We got about 2 or 3 inches out here. Not any big deal, but we'll probably get a big deal if we wait a while. This is the November, I think the 18th, my atomic clock quit here. I don't know what happened. I mean, it must have a battery out on it or something. This may be the 19th. I don't have my other calendar right in front of me. Anyhow, it's going to be a happy day today. This is Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. And don't forget the old P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And we thank all you people who have got your donations for the show in, and we've gotten our money orders out to some of the prisoners and inmates and so forth, and so we're all set for pretty much for this month. There might be a couple of stragglers out there, but they'll come around. Yeah, I had somebody sent me an email from a town down in Georgia. He says, I'm ready to save the race. What do I do? Well, the first thing I always tell them to do is go up to resist.com and start studying and learning things and finding out what makes things tick. And then they should go from there. And this guy wrote me back and he said, well, when I resist.com, that's useless. worthless. And so I emailed him back and I said, well, if you find resist.com useless to you, then you're useless to us. Because we don't want people to just go off half-cock. We want people who educate themselves. And we got the college education up there on race and security, revolution, and all that kind of stuff. And people need to study, you know. If you're going to go up against an enemy, you got to study him for a long time, usually, if you've got the time, before you're ready to make the frontal attack or side attack or rear attack or wherever you want to hit him. But if people say, well, I don't want to study anything, I don't want to read anything, I don't want to listen to anything, I just want you to tell me who to kill or something like that or something stupid. Anyhow, we get some funny emails in here sometimes. Guys like that always end up back or in the right wing because they make it very simple. Just send us a donation and scream white power and play a skinhead song and you're a warrior then. Okay. Got a note from Matt Hale's mother, Evelyn, and she'd been trying to help him get his violin into the prison. I guess Matt plays the violin and maybe he's pretty good. But I'm trying to educate his mother a little bit about how this works. I said, they're not going to let that violin into the prison because they would have to have a guard there while he played it because there's all kinds of parts on a violin that could be made into a weapon. And I don't care how much he swears he's not going to do it, it could be done. So I said, that's just going to be the security of the prison. They're not going to let him have a violin in there, you know. I doubt whether they'd even let him have a mouth harp, a harmonica. Because things like that, an intelligent prisoner can fashion a weapon over the months and years he's there. He's got all the time in the world to do it. And they can come up with very interesting weapons inside a prison. And I also told her, don't beg these prison officials. You just make them happy. A whole lot of these people, wardens and so forth, are psychopaths. Or if they can get a leg up by persecuting one of our people, they're going to do it and make their life miserable. And the more you say, pretty please, and demand this and that, the more they're going to be chuckling in the background. You know, they're happy, you're miserable. You know, guys in prison, they're not trying to rehabilitate anybody. In most cases, you're like an animal in a zoo. They're sticking sticks through the bars and punching you. That's my opinion of most of the prisons in this country. And I think you read Jack London's book, Star Rover, and you get an idea of what really nasty prison life can be like, even though that's, some say it may have improved a little since the early part of the last century, but it's sure the psychological torture is what's really bad today. They don't have to be beating you up every day. They can use psychological torture on you, and they do. And the guys around tell me about it, you know. So it's not enough just to get you in a box and separate you from regular society. They want to torture you mentally. And I remember when they beat Gary Yarbrough about half to death. He wasn't even expected to live because he must have resisted some of their crap, and they just literally went into the cell and beat him almost to death. Of course, that goes on all the time, whether you're black or white or brown or yellow or whatever you are in these prisons. And they get away with it usually because it's a closed society. And you can, in a closed society like that, you can hide things, just like the Soviet Union. In a closed society, so much of the crime that went on in the Soviet Union was hidden and nobody knew about it. And that's the story there. Well, we are midweek, boys and girls, and guess what? We're going to have a little class here. Class, settle down. Sit down in the back here, because we're going to have a little bit of money talk here from our good buddy on Russia TV. You know, I'll tell you something. I don't believe any press totally at all. And the worst is domestic television and radio here in this country. But I do tend to sit down and watch some Russia TV. And they have some good programs on there. And if you've got a cable, you probably can get it. Or even here on a satellite, I can get it. But it is heads and shoulders above most news broadcasting, and we have to get it from the Ruskies. How about our comrades in Russia? Here we go.
To the Kaiser Report, I'm Max Kaiser. If at first you don't succeed at rigged prices and market manipulation, try again. Try again. Why not? The regulators don't care. The people you're defrauding don't care. Just keep banging away at it.
Yes, well, Max, we're continuing this theme of the numpties that are defrauded over and over again because nobody seems to care. But Kaiser Report is dedicated to chronicling all of these crimes because one day when the Nuremberg-like trials happen, all of this will be evidence presented to the prosecution or to the hangman. UBS Precious Metals misconduct found by FINMA in FX probe. Misconduct, of course, is typically known as fraud or crime to the ordinary person. Of course, if you did these misconducts, you would be charged with a crime, so don't try it at home unless you work at a big bank. Switzerland's regulators found serious misconduct by UBS employees in precious metals trading, particularly with silver, as part of its review of the bank's foreign exchange business. Electronic chats played a key role in the improper conduct in foreign exchange and precious metals trading, the Swiss Financial Market Supervisor Authority, or FINMA, said in a statement. It found front-running when traders profit from advanced knowledge about a transaction expected to influence prices over client orders for silver.
Well, I'm completely changing my approach to this entire epidemic of fraud.
What are you going to do?
The bankers are committing serial fraud, and they are saying that, look, regulators don't stop us. Why should we stop? So I think I'm changing my entire approach to this. I think we got to go after the regulators. You know these wireless sex toys that they have? You can operate them wirelessly. I think all these regulators should be maybe implanted with some kind of weed whacker type device up their sphinx. And every time one of these market makers or traders commits a fraud, then they get a little weed whacking up their sphinx. You know, that'll get their attention. Until they regulate the fraud, until they figure out a deterrent to stop the fraud, let the weed whacking sphinx device keep whacking, 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 and it burrows deeper and deeper. Pretty soon it'll hit a vital organ, I would imagine. But I think it's the regulators at this point. Forget the traders. They're going to keep stealing money. If you give a kid a big box of chocolates and say, you know, have all you want, they're not going to stop eating the chocolate.
Well, I think it was Napoleon who said something along the lines of politicians and regulator sorts will allow this to happen until the people force them to stop. So I think it's the people, too. The people don't seem to care as long as their house prices are rising. That's what's kept them quiet, as long as their food prices are cheap. But those are rising. So let's see what happens. And now the regulator FINMA in Switzerland, what they said was that the traders engage in activities including sharing of information on orders, flows, and customers, as well as front-running and triggering of stop-loss orders. So that's why you said they pick a price. They know that all of their clients have a stop-loss order, i.e. sell at that price. So those are when you see the cascading and the silver price down, is they know that they've triggered that in order to pick up the price of that silver.
Yeah,
in this case.
There's a market price, and around the market price are these big stop orders from managers who are hedging their risk. And if you can trigger a market advance to trigger a stop order, you get a lot of free stock, because right after you pick up the free stock, you know, the markets resume where they were before you manipulated the price. So it's a way to pick up some cheap stock. But again, the regulators, the FINMA, well, it sounds like smegma, they're the people that I think I'm focusing on now. I'm not focusing on the bankers anymore. I'm focusing on the regulators. And the regulators are regulated by the politicians. So I agree with the traders now. I'm now in the traders' camp. I'm pointing the finger at the regulators now. Forget the traders. They're helping us point out the problem.
They're pointing the problem at the regulators. But the bankers are the regulators because this is a self-regulation, a self-regulated inquiry. The UBS looked at itself and this is what they found. So all of these Forex, LIBOR, they're having to investigate themselves.
Right,
so
but to allow that to happen is the responsibility of the regulator.
Yeah.
So every time it's like that movie, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, where the little angel gets his wings if he saves someone from committing suicide. Here, the little sphincter gets a weed whacker buzz every time a regulator lets a trader commit a Forex manipulation. You know, burrow into those vital organs. Whoever FINMA is, or Financial Conduct Authority, or SEC, these are the crooks.
Department of Justice.
Yeah. Forget the traders. They're just kids. They're giving free money. They'll take it. It's the regulators now we're going after. I'm totally exonerating the traders. They're helping us point out the real problem, the regulators.
Okay, so let's look at what the regulators in UBS did in Switzerland. FINMA told Zurich-based UBS to give up profits of 134 million Swiss francs, which is about 130 million U.S. dollars, for the misconduct, and said bonuses for foreign exchange of precious metals employees globally will be capped at 200% of their basic salary for 2 years. Trading desk supervisors at UBS eventually prohibited front-running in the light of the obviousness and frequency of misconduct, FINMA said.
That's not a deterrent.
No. So here their salary, they get to collect bonuses. They're only limited to 200% of that bonus, so a doubling of that. So, of course, they're just going to increase their salaries. And FINMA is like saying with gratitude, well, UBS was good to stop this front-running when it became too obvious.
Well, look, let's make this a social networking enterprise. So every single regulator in every single major market will have their name on a social networking site. And every time any trader commits fraud, the social network votes or likes or thumbs up which one of these 50 or 60 major regulators gets the weed whacker sphincter treatment. Okay? We're going to simply take it from that approach. It's going to be a social network-enabled, wireless, weed-whacking sphincter up the organs on the regulators. There's 50 or 60 names of these regulators that we're going to go after and target. Because there's 150,000 traders. There's too many. But there's probably only maybe 60 or 70 major regulators. That's manageable to be corrected.
So these regulators, of course, they call it misconduct, and they also say that, and apologists in the media will say that it caused no harm. So we're going to look at some of the harm. Here's a tweet from Pedro da Costa, who covers the Federal Reserve for Wall Street Journal, and he said, "Recession brought suffering and lifelong risks to extra 619,000 children in Italy, 444,000 in France, and 2 million in Mexico, according to UNICEF." So, of course, again, just like it's misconduct when banks commit a crime, here it's recession when actually it was basically a grand larceny. It was grand theft.
Right. The kids are starving to death.
And their lifelong chances are forever altered because there are no jobs, so they have no experience, so they'll continue to live with their families and feed off the state forever.
They're willing to commit a pogrom, an extermination of children, for a few bucks.
And the other story of the consequences, remember, people, the mainstream media, the CNBCs of the world, the Fox News, say there were no consequences to these crimes, and that's why they should just pay a little fine. Here's a headline from The Economist. "Wealth of America's top 0.1% is about to exceed that of bottom 90% for the first time since the 1930s. So, either you believe that this 0.1% have become much better, smarter, more talented, much more vibrant and better than the bottom 90%, or there's something going on, or these crimes are enabling them to steal so much from the numpties, from the muppets, from all the idiots out there that those idiots deserve to be poor.
Well, imagine you're irrigating a field, you're a farmer, you have a source of water, maybe it's coming off a dam. The water comes to the field, and if it goes across the field in an equal distribution, the entire field reaps a bounty during the harvest. But these regulators, when the water gets to the field, they build regulatory siphoning devices, essentially, or redirection devices, that allow all that liquidity to go into the top 0.1% and leave the 99.9% fallow or dry or empty or
That's
dead.
That's a very good analogy.
Yeah. So I'm saying the regulator is the point that we need to focus on. The bankers are by nature criminals. Then we need some criminals in the system. That's the way humans are. But we can't let the criminals define the system. The only way we can stop it is by re-architecting the regulatory framework and doing it in an aggressive way, on an individual-by-individual basis.
Well, okay, you are an ice hockey player.
Yes.
Now, if the regulator, i.e. the umpire, whatever you call that.
The ref,
whatever. I play baseball, okay? If he were just, like, stepping in and not allowing you to hip-check somebody, but allowing the other side to hip-check you, what would have happened on the field?
Right. In the game of hockey, there's a certain tolerated amount of violence.
Yeah.
And that's part of the game. Just like in capitalism, there's a tolerated amount of a certain capitalistic violence where traders are very aggressive. And this is actually part of the system, and it's not damaging overall to the system unless you let the most violent element define the system. If ice hockey was nothing more than 60 minutes of slashing and pucks to the face, you know, like Mark Carney, obviously, he's a Bank of England governor, and he was a goalie in an Ivy League school in America for a while. You can tell he's got the brain damage that almost every hockey goalie has. He can barely put a coherent sentence together, which is a symptomatic of brain damage.
But by the way, he's also come out this week and said that we're not going to have bailouts, we're going to have bail-ins. He's warning you already. So finally, on this headline of the cost, that there's one team on the ice hockey rink that doesn't have to ever sit out, whatever that line is, where they go behind the wall and they're on penalty, right? I thought you were going to come in with a
line. Yeah, no, because I don't understand what you're saying. There's
penalty box. Yeah, penalty box. They're sitting in the penalty box.
That's
one
right.
Team doesn't have to sit in there. Well, food costs eating into consumers saving at the pump as holidays near. So apparently, consumers in the U.S., they're all the headlines in the mainstream media are saying, woohoo, gasoline prices are down in the U.S. This is going to save them $5 billion. Well, higher food costs are going to cost them $10 billion more, they say. So net-net, they're down $5 billion.
This is pump blindness, because people in America, the only contact they have with the economy is pump price for gas or petrol. And so if it goes down, they assume everything is getting cheaper. They don't factor in the whole list of things that they have to add up at the end of the month and notice that, in fact, prices are going up and they're getting slaughtered with inflation and shrinkflation and everything that's not traded on an international market is going up in price because it's monopolized by cartels. So health and education, because they're not traded on a global exchange like oil is, these prices are being driven much higher because they're monopolized by local cartels.
And the average household in the U.S. spends 3 times more on their food than on petrol prices, or gasoline prices, as they call them in America. So there you have it. That's the cost for that. But I think, finally, with your regulator story, I think we need to combine it with the ice hockey story. So the Weed Whacker on Ice.
Weed Whackers on Ice is the name of a new West End show, which is coming this Christmas. It's the Grinch who stole the Weed Whacker in time. Kids love it. Grandpa, bring the whole family right here at the West End in London. Boris Johnson will be there, completely naked, rolling around in a vat full of Marmite. So Make sure you make reservations early for this. Stacey, we got to go.
Well, there's a point I want to make. I try to make it all the time. I hope it sinks in with people. I'm sure it does with a lot of people. That when you have wars of exploitation and occupation using all kinds of flimsy excuses, regime change and all that bullshit, then the outcome of that is massive upheaval of the people in that area, in that country, in that region. And they're trying to get out of the way of the war machine, mostly from the United States, plus the other NATO countries. Most people just want to get away and get out of the way. So what happens? They try to get over to Europe, or they try to get the United States. And then, I come on here and complain about all the ragheads and come in the United States. But in reality, 90% of this is caused not by people who want to immigrate, but by people who are driven from their homes, or their homes are bombed, or their countries are demolished, their city halls no more. Look at what Gaza looks like after the Israelis tromped on the Palestinians over there. But that's just an example of what happens. Now, they said there that 0.1% at the top control most of the money, the same as 90% at the bottom. So it takes 90% of the bottom, and then you got 1% at the top cleaning up. Now, I know Max actually supports revolution. I've heard him talk about it many times. He goes as close to the line as he can get. He believes in a type of a revolution, along with that other English rock star that's been promoting a type of revolution, too. Well, they're giving you the key right here. They say the regulators are the major problem in the economy. Now, people want to talk me to talk about race all the time and the Jews and all that, but there's a time you have to break it down into elements of the how the economy affects and deteriorates our race. You've got to have an honest economy. Years ago, when I was talking more about economics, I used to say you could take an Aryan man and woman, an educated, intelligent Aryan man and woman, a couple, parachute them into the darkest areas of Africa with an honest money system, and within 50 years, they would be a great empire or a great country. And I believe that with the right brains and an honest money system, everything is possible. So here he says, so Max is giving us the deal here. He says there's 60 names of the major regulators who are not doing their job, not controlling the traders. And so, like he said, we've been chasing the traders when we should be going after the regulators. And so it wouldn't be that, it's not that hard to find out who these 60 regulators are here in the United States and England and so forth. So you got to put the pressure on them. The public has to rise up against these people. And you know what I mean, man. They have to be threatened. They have to have the pressure of the people, the masses, put upon them. And, of course, they also talked in this show about how dumb the public is and the possibility of getting people to rise up and physically go after these regulators is probably not going to happen. But there's also the possibility that there are people out there who are not running with the crowd who can and possibly will take it to the regulators. So no matter how it would be done, it's got to be done. Because you see, like they said, the gasoline price goes down and everybody around here says, oh, whoopee, boy, that's great. The gas is cheaper, but you go in to buy a dozen eggs and they doubled in price, or a pound of meat. So they get you no matter which way, unless there becomes an active revolutionary movement that actually has teeth and actually bites and force the hand of the system. That's about all I can say on the subject. We know the problem. We know the racial problem. Direct action must be taken sooner or later. We're way past time when it should have been direct action. We lost the first round, there's no doubt about that. Hopefully, gradually, we can move towards winning the second round. Different things like the economy and the environment can help us out. In fact, you know, I came up with an idea yesterday. I've been saying this Keystone Pipeline was so horrible and it could be bad for the environment. Well, they were talking on the business show yesterday. They said, look, and I knew this, all that tar sands oil is not is just going down through the country. And then it's being distilled and put on ships, and it's going to go to China. Well, it's the filthiest, dirtiest, most toxic oil that there is. So guess what? Give it to China. Give them all they want, because the infrastructure and the environment is going totally to pieces in China. People in the city can hardly breathe. They can hardly see, a block ahead of them and the whole bit. So if you want to neutralize China, I guess let's let the pipeline go through. Let all that dirty oil go right down through the United States and over to China, sort of as a chemical warfare. What do you think? You see, in other words, I believe in the art politically of jiu-jitsu. Turn the strength of your enemy around upon them. And so I'm not going to cry about the Keystone or pipeline anymore, because I guess it's going to go through. I forgot where they got their vote. I didn't watch the late news. But any of this dirty oil that we can get shoved over to China, the more likely to neutralize the power of China. So what do you think of that? You know, let's turn it around on them, huh? And as far as gas is concerned, drive as little as possible. You know, combine several things that you want to do. Like I go drive 3 miles to town and just have a list. And instead of going every day, you go maybe twice a week. And that screws their system up a little bit. You buy vegetables and fruit and so forth from small operators, especially during the season. Don't buy anything from the grocery store if you don't have to. Don't buy anything that's got a lot of sugar in, because the sugar empire is a lot of our problem. They've got the power to tell the politicians exactly what they want, and they do it. And so a lot of people don't recognize the power of sugar, and they don't recognize the danger of sugar. Okay, let's see. What else did I have to say about that? Well, like Mexico, all this problem in Mexico. Well, American corporations stir up most of the problems in Mexico. Now, the Mexicans obviously don't have the ability that white Aryans do to control and keep a forward-looking economy and so forth together, but the Mexican people have been used to, for hundreds of years, of living on small pieces of property and eating basic staples and not needing too much, and so they most of them are happy, relatively happy, even with this problem with American corporations fucking up Mexico. But when it gets beyond anything, when it gets worse and worse, what do? Like I say, in mass, they come running up here. Now, the same people that created the problem in the first place are blaming the people who are trying to escape. Now, we don't like them coming up here, right? But it's because of a racial position. The capitalistas, they get the pie and eat it too. They first rape Mexico, and then when they come up here, they rape them in the job place. And meanwhile, all us whites are being raped too. So you got to go to the source of the problem. And the United States capitalist predators are the cause of a giant share, a giant percentage of the problems all over the world. And they've got 80 to 90 some military bases to back it up. You either go along with it or we'll crush your ass. First of all, we'll shoot your leader, because all of a sudden we'll decide you need regime change. he's not going along. You know, I remember when Patrice Lumumba was in, what was it, Katanga, or what country it was down there in Africa. He was a nationalist and was trying to do the best for his people. Well, the corporation saw to that. They brought in this other guy, and I'm trying to remember his name. I don't remember it right off, to knock off and kill Lumumba, which they did. And he became a victim of the Cold War struggle, which the Cold War struggle was simply that the Bolsheviks out of New York taking all that money and carrying on a revolution in Russia was a capitalist plan too, to take Russia out of competition with the rest of the world. In other words, eliminate a competitor. Now, hardly anybody talks about that. Talk about communism and all that, but it was actually state capitalism in Russia designed to keep the Russian nation out of competition with the West. And I don't ever hear anybody talking about that. So since nobody wants to talk about it, there must be some truth in it. That's the way I look at it. That's the way I look at it. The whole thing was a money deal. Not ideology. Well, a lot of people were in it for ideology. But why, you know, the banks all loaned the Bolsheviks the money, or they gave the Bolsheviks the money, the biggest banks in New York, to go over there and start a revolution. Well, why would the capitalists want to help a communist revolution? Do you ever ask yourself? Because capitalism and communism are two arms on the same body. And we've had plenty of books put out on that. You know, so that's obvious. But I don't hear him talking about the core reason to take Russia out of competition with the rest of the world. Uh-huh. Anyhow, think about it. Think about that. Don't think about Soviet Union as being a communist country, because it wasn't. It was a state capitalist country. That'd be sort of like if you were Kmart on one side of the street and Walmart on the other, and one of you decided the other was a problem, taking too much of your profits, and you'd figure a way of getting the one across the street shut down and boarded up and not being able to sell anything. Then you would make a lot more money, wouldn't you? Well, that's the way it was, and that's the way it is. Same problem we had with Nasser of Egypt. He was a nationalist, and he was fighting for the Egyptian people. And he finally closed down the Suez Canal, and that gave the Western countries an excuse to attack Egypt and get rid of Nasser. But any time a nationalist or a racist or anything like that rise up, world capitalism, predatory capitalism, is right there to send troops in. Always have another excuse, of course. They're not going to say, well, we're going to get rid of him because he's a nationalist, but just like Assad in Syria. They want to get rid of him. He's not playing ball with them. And he's trying to save his country. I'm not saying that Assad's a great man. I don't know anything about him. But that's the way it works. He stepped on somebody's toes in the predatory capitalist struggle. And so they're going to teach him a lesson and get him out of power one way or the other. But you see, whenever they do these things, they create more uprisings. And so we've gone from Al-Qaeda, Taliban, Al-Qaeda, through some other groups, now to ISIS. And it keeps getting bigger and bigger. But the capitalists, predatory capitalists, really don't care, because as long as they're making a fortune on arms and weaponry and so forth and robbing people of their countries and everything else, they don't care. They have no soul, baby. No soul. Well, I took a little time off and went to my high school class luncheon, as I do every month, and shoot the shit and see who died. And we have a good time, I'll tell you that. But I went to the where was it? Went to the grocery store right after that to get a couple of things. And there was a white couple with a teenage white girl. All of them were overweight, fat. And they were tagging along two Negro babies. Now, whether that's a product of this stupid teenage daughter that wasn't brought up right, or what it is, it jogs me back into the idea that intended consequences. Now, we talked about regulators earlier and how there's maybe 60 of these big regulators in the government and so forth that could change things, and if not changed, replace or deprive, say, omay, deprive of existence. But I got to thinking, do we want that? Because I don't think that would solve the whole problem for the white race, or at least the right white race, the right people in the white race. They're always talking about unintended circumstances. Well, let's start thinking intended circumstances, like I said with that Keystone pipeline, pouring all that dirty oil down to the port in Texas and then shipping it to China, where it'll more pollute Chinese air, water, and everything. Well, that'd tend to keep China somewhat weak, wouldn't it? Sort of weaken a lot of their gains they've made. And as being a racial competitive, that's what we want. So, my intended circumstance is build that pipeline. Pump all that shit over into China. Yeah. We don't want it here. They're going to do it anyhow. They'll figure a way of doing it. Anyhow, you got this Eric Holder. He's a regulator. Justice Department's regulator, State Department's regulator. But anyhow, if you had 60 of these people and you knocked them all off, what would change? Or what would change permanently? Nothing. For a while, it might get a little better. And we think, boy, that's going to really help the white race. Materially, it would. But in actuality, genetically, it wouldn't. So we're better off to leave these regulators and traders wipe out the economy. Wipe the goddamn thing right to the ground. Meanwhile, you prepare yourself to survive no matter what you have to do to survive as white people. Yeah. Besides, I don't think we have 60 people in this country on our side that would be willing to do away with 60 of these regulators. Do you? People don't want to die. They don't want to die for nothing. So anyhow, that's pretty unlikely that would happen anyhow. You'd probably have to import them if you want somebody to go after the regulators. You'd have to import them from some country that's been kicked the shit out of by our military forces and the military industrial complex. They might be willing to do it. In fact, I think they'd like to do it. But that's beyond our control. I think we should stick to the nature's ability to correct this. And whether it's global warming or global cooling, I think we should say, hell yes, go for it. What do you mean, Metzger, you crazy son of a bitch? Well, wait a minute. No matter which way it goes, it'll start shutting down all the stuff that's causing the problem, but still, it'll keep going, and so you've got global cooling, global warming, whichever, kick-starting true evolution, getting all the bullshit out of the way. Now, don't you think that's a good idea? Then, no matter how few Aryans or white people are left, the smart ones, they'll start repopulating because they're smart. And what'll be happening to the third world around the world? Yeah, they'll be eating each other. So I think, you see, we're always looking at the bad side or the bad way of doing things. Why don't we just say, well, you're fucking up, and just go right ahead and do it? Yeah, you traders want all the money, and people at the bottom have no money, and you regulators, you're not going to do anything about it anyhow, and there's evidently nobody around there got the balls to knock them off. So let it roll. Let them totally destroy the economic system. It needs to be destroyed anyhow. The capitalist system was never a good idea. So then we go to nature. Well, we're going to have global cooling, huh? Well, it'll freeze things out. A lot of people are going to die. There's going to be a son of a bitch, but it'll turn around. And the ones who survive are surviving of the fittest will survive. And it's my hope and gamble that it'll be the smartest of the white race. Or we have global warming and everything floods and all that kind of stuff, and the Empire State Building gets underwater. Well, that's okay too. Just think of how much trash and rot and kike manipulation you'd get rid of if Manhattan Island went underwater pretty fast. So, isn't that working in our favor? See, in other words, I keep saying worse is better, and I'm trying to explain why it's worse is better. So think about it. You got any response to it? You got any better ideas? Oh, you're going to form a new political party or join VNN or one of these other so-called racial groups? What are you going to do? Rise up? Why, hell, the general white population of this country couldn't rise up for nothing. They don't have the balls. They don't have the courage. They're unhealthy. They're unfit. They're fat. And so forget that. We ought to rise up and do something. Bullshit, they can't even get out of their easy chair. They're too fat. So that's, forget that. We're going to vote somebody into office that's going to straighten it out. Dream on. Dream on for what needs to be done. There's never going to be a politician going to be willing or prepared to do it. They're all worried about their legacy. Obama's worried about his legacy. And the Republicans are making sure he doesn't have a legacy. No matter what he did good, he'll never be respected. You half feel sorry for the guy. But I can't, because he played the game. He didn't even help the black people. Hardly any. And the black people said, here comes our Messiah, man. We're going to get on board with this guy. And what did he do? He fucked them. Actually, more in a lot of ways than white people have screwed them before. You get these deals where you feel like laughing and crying at the same time. It's sort of like a psychotic reaction. Okay, well, that's about it. So we have intended consequences. Forget unintended consequences. Because even the unintended consequences that the system brings on itself is our consequences that we want. Yeah, because we're playing for all the marbles. We're turning that wheel. We're playing that cosmic natural poker. Saying, you want to fuck things up? Okay, go fuck it all up. And then we'll see what happens at the end. See who crosses the finish line at the end. Yeah, I like it. I like it. They're coming to take me away. Well, here's another racist story you may be interested in, which I can understand. I'm hardening up my heart a little more. I think maybe a lot more. This is about a traffic accident down in Kentucky.
When WDRB raised questions about mismanagement within a local fire department, it brought new information that raises questions about racism.
And a story you'll see only on WDRB News tonight. Valerie Chin uncovers some shocking new video of the Southeast Bullet fire chief.
Well, I got a family of four from Cincinnati I got to do something with.
This is the comment that has Southeast Bullet Fire Department Chief Julius Hatfield feeling the heat.
What the guy says is, we ain't taking no niggers here tonight. Whoa, we'll see here.
Video from a Bullitt County Sheriff Deputy's body camera shows Hatfield's department responding to a car accident on I-65 south of the Claremont exit in September. Hatfield, seen here in a yellow shirt, is offering to help Lauren Dickin, whose pickup truck was involved in a crash.
You got a jack, ain't she?
If you'll show me where some things is at, I'll get my guys to start changing the tire for you.
That's all right.
Maybe a bill.
Dickin was taken to the hospital and released. Then the sheriff's department says firefighters picked him up and took him to the firehouse where his car was waiting for him. But it's a very different story for the other driver. Changi Mwangi, his wife and two children were in the other car, which was damaged in the crash.
You don't have AAA.
No AAA?
No.
Okay. Who's driving?
Me.
Okay. I need your driver's license, proof of insurance, and a registration on the car.
I have...
Okay.
Mwangi, who is black, didn't get the same treatment from the Southeast Bullet Fire Department. The Sheriff's Department confirms this is Hatfield talking to the deputy.
Well, I got a family of four from Cincinnati I got to do something with.
Mwangi says he noticed Southeast Bullet Fire helped Dickin, but not Mwangi and his family. But he didn't think anything of it because his family wasn't injured and he didn't need assistance. He says he mostly dealt with the Bullitt County Sheriff's Department, which was helpful. It's another startling remark from the chief, who had a surprising reaction when WDRB asked questions about financial mismanagement and empty firehouses within the Southeast Bullitt Fire Department.
Why are there so many firehouses that are empty?
Do you understand English, darling? Do you understand English?
Turn the camera off. I've asked you in a nice way. Buddy, call the cops and get them on up here, will you?
I asked you once tonight if you understand English. I'm speaking English.
The Kentucky State Auditor's Office is looking into the Fire Protection District's finances and expects to have a decision soon. I spoke to Hatfield on the phone about his language at the I-65 crash. He didn't want to go on camera, but said he doesn't remember the incident, and sometimes there is a slip of the tongue. He also apologized for the way he treated me last week. Valerie Chin, WDRB News.
That was Valerie Chin giving the fire chief hell, and there was some, and the black family, he was Mwangi. His name was Mwangi. He's from Africa someplace or South Pacific, I don't know. So the fire chief favored white people. Good for you. About time somebody give a shit about white people. Another piece of news you've probably read about is Bill Cosby's biting the dirt. This Negro that is eulogized and, well, not eulogized, but worshipped by millions of white people as a perfect black man has been caught with his hand in the panties. Yeah, I love to see that kind of stuff. It makes my heart grow fonder. Well, I guess this is payback for Gaza. Two Palestinians attacked a synagogue in Jerusalem, killing three American Israeli rabbis. Well, you should only be able to be one or the other. A British Israeli rabbi and a policeman, and shifting the focus of violence to deep within the heart of the Jewish half of the city. Wow. Shows a picture on here on the New York urinal of a bunch of Orthodox Jews sobbing and crying. It was the deadliest attack on Israelis in Jerusalem in 6 years. The assailants, armed with a rifle and butcher knives, targeted the Kehillat B'nai Torah synagogue in the ultra-Orthodox Jewish neighborhood of Harnof on Tuesday. Could that be because the hardcore Jews, the these Orthodox Jews don't really like the idea of the State of Israel. I don't know how many of them, but I know there's a lot of them demonstrate against it and don't believe it should ever have been. Isn't it ironic that a synagogue with those Orthodox Jews gets hit like this? Sounds to me like it might be a Mossad operation behind the curtain. Oh, they wouldn't do that? They set up the 6-6 million bullshit. Why wouldn't they do this? I will read a little bit here at the end of the show from The Cult of Equality, a book I rediscovered. It's a tremendous book by Stuart Omer Landry. There's still some of them around on the internet you can get a hold of. I recommend you get them because I doubt whether they'll be around too much longer. This is from the preface to the first edition. During the past 20 years, hundreds of books and pamphlets and thousands of newspaper and magazine articles have been printed which enunciate or advocate a belief in the equality of the races. Some of this equalitarian literature is the result of scientific doubts of a few anthropologists and sociologists. But for the most part, it is an expression of a dissatisfied minority seeking to achieve social equality. In the same period, few books or articles have been written to defend the theory of the inequality of the races. Little is being done to offset the propaganda of those who are trying to establish racial equality. It would seem that the equalitarians are winning their case before the court and public opinion by default. Well, this was written in 1945, so you see what's happened since then. Perhaps most people believe that the white race is a superior race and that it is not necessary to refute the obvious fallacious arguments of those who seek to prove that all races are equal. But their complacence may be due to a rude shock. In the English-speaking countries, particularly the United States, those asserting the equality of the races are convincing many by vigor of their propaganda and the very volume of their printed matter that their theories are true. It's high time that someone file a majority report, or as a member of the court, hand down a dissenting opinion. With this in mind, my book is offered to the public. It is written in an effort to bring to the attention of thinking people the necessity of preserving the purity and integrity of the white race. The Cult of Equality contains no newfound truths. In the main, its arguments are old, some dating back to the time before the advent of the sciences of anthropology and ethnology. The arguments are familiar to many. In fact, it is the refutation of these arguments that has so concerned the new school of thought, which asserts that all races are equal. But a new generation is with us, and the old truths must be refreshed and vitalized and placed before the young men and women of today, which they didn't do enough of since 45. To this end, I have shown that the age-old idea of inequality of the races is still valid. I've studied the latest evidence presented by many scholars and investigators and find that such evidence strengthens this belief. There is not, however, unanimity of opinion about the racial superiority or inequality among one division of scientists, the anthropologists. Some, perhaps the smaller number among these, assert that there is no difference between the races except the superficial differences in color, hair, and other slight physiological variations. Now, you see how it's changed? It just flip-flop. It's the other way around now. Others maintain the conventional view of the superiority of the Caucasian race. And still others, more cautious, say that the Caucasians are probably superior, but that this superiority has not been proved. Look around you, idiot. You don't have to go very far to prove it to yourself. The first group say, in effect, that black is white and that racial differences are only skin deep. The second group deny that the differences are only skin deep and say the differences are noticeable in the mental and physical as well as the physical constitutions of the races. The third group makes no categorical assertions. but their attitude of doubt weighs opinion towards the theory of Caucasian racial superiority. It is a Scotch verdict, or not proven. Anthropologists studying skulls and bones must generalize from incomplete evidence. Except by the study of skeletal remains, they have no other method of comparing physically the men who lived in the distant past with those of other eras or with those now living. The skeleton is the base of the animal, and the size and the shape of the cranium of importance in the physiology of any of the vertebrata. But from bare bones, one can only describe approximately the form that enclosed these bones, and measure by guesswork only the intelligence of the brain was once locked up in the brain case. Anthropologists are used to dealing with ifs, possibles, and probablies. Hence, there is room for divergence of opinion. This tendency to dissent is likewise evidenced in the study of the living races of mankind. The professors of anthropology and their students who specialize in this important branch of learning are few. Their work is little known to the general public. Most are immersed in their studies. Now and then one writes a book for the general reader. These occasional books often expound an extreme theory such as that of the equality of all races. Their authors become the authorities to racial propagandists. The opinions of two or three of these authorities I shall attempt to refute. It is not for a layman to rush in where the anthropologists disagree, but the fact that they do disagree shows that in some respects the science is far from being an exact one. The intelligent reader must examine the facts that all the authorities agree are facts, and using common sense, form his own judgment. It must be understood that I am not trying to belittle the science of anthropology, which includes ethnology, anthropometry, and sociology, for it is the study of man, and therefore a noble science, unless perverted by the kikes. If the proper study of mankind is man, his physical and mental attributes, as well as his spiritual side, his past as well as his present, then anthropology should be the most important and best known of all the sciences. And we should utilize the knowledge that its professors impart to develop a higher type of human being. In other words, breed up, and to create in the future a greater civilization than the world has ever seen. Unfortunately, the science of anthropology does not occupy a place of much importance in today's educational system or in the estimation of the general public. Let us hope that this neglect will soon be remedied. At present, our greatest difficulty is getting to the truth. Some do not know it. A few misrepresent the truth because it serves their purpose best, and others keep quiet because they fear the attacks of organized groups. In fact, the truthful writer is unpopular. He makes more enemies than he does friends. But aside from the hot water a controversial writer jumps into, it is easy for the well-meaning educator or scientist who writes about such prosaic matters as bread, butter, coffee, or tobacco to get into trouble. Those who prepare the bulletins for the U.S. government departments have found this out. Several years ago, a bulletin issued by the Home Economic Division of the Department of Agriculture stated that white bread does not contain the vitamins that are found in brown bread. Thousands of telegrams from millers, wheat farmers, elevator owners, merchants, bankers poured in protest against the circulation of this pamphlet. Since that time, a way has been found to restore vitamin B to white flour. But when the bulletin appeared, it contained an unpleasant truth, and its author was mortified to have his efforts to improve the diet of our people resisted and his facts denounced as untrue. An extended debate took place in Congress recently over the comparative merits of butter and oleomargarine and their respective vitamin contents. Well, oleomargarine, for you younger people, was plain out lard, pig lard, and they had a little packet of red powdery material. I'm not sure what it was made out of. And you put that in with this plain lard, mixed it up, and it looks sort of like butter. Very unhealthy. I know, I used to eat it when I was a kid. Scientists appeared before committees, some terrifying that butter in the diet is better than oleo, and others that oleo is just as good as butter dietetically. We all know the scientific controversy that has raged for years. Whoa! Sorry about that. Over the harmful effects or lack of them in the case of tobacco and coffee. Such controversies illustrate the difficulty of propagating the truth. And the man who tries is often denounced for his pains. These reflections arise when I consider that in the realm of anthropology alone, my opinions will meet with opposition. And today, if he'd just written his book, they would really go after his ass. And my conclusions will be assailed by many. But I have based my arguments and conclusions on analysis of known facts. And where alleged facts are disputed or undetermined, I have been guided by the law of probability. I have tried to furnish enough data so that each reader, reasoning by induction, can determine for himself the soundness of my premises. In generalizing on the subject so vast and complicated as that of the problem of race, one can only approximate the truth. In comparing million people with another million, we must work in averages. Large groups will overlap each other. For instance, if the most intelligent of a group of Negroes from West Africa could be segregated, they might outpoint and prove to be superior to a group of Italians from the lowest strata of Italian society. A few individuals might possess a high IQ and equal or even surpass the brightest Caucasians. There are cultured Chinamen who in intelligence and education and general knowledge are far ahead of the vast majority of American people. There are Hindus whose knowledge of philosophy places them on a plane equal to or above that of the philosophers of any nation. There are Negroes from Jamaica, jet black, and of pure African descent who are graduates of Oxford and whose culture surpasses that of the average Englishman. There are Negroes in the United States who in education, culture, and refinement are way ahead of many white people. As Edmund Burke said, you cannot draw up a bill of indictment against a whole people. Neither can you make charges against a whole race without allowing exceptions. But I do believe in the racial inferiority which exists in mass. My generalizations about the Negro refer particularly to those of pure blood, or to those who are at least three-quarters full Negro. As in the United States, part of the Negro population is more white than black. Many of the statements about Negroes generally have been modified. Mongolians and Malay Polynesians are not quite as mixed, but as races they can be classified as inferior to whites, but superior to blacks. I want particularly to emphasize that my conclusions apply to races as a mass, not to individuals. I do not want to reflect on the intelligence, integrity, and culture of individuals who have shown themselves to be superior persons. I have several qualms about writing this book. There is, first, the fear of hurting the feelings of my friends of the Negro race or some splendid Chinese I have met. Also, in pointing out the physical variations of the races, some might think that I am making fun of or treating lightly the physical disadvantages exhibited by Negroes, Mongolians, and those of other races. This, of course, is far from my intention. Nor do I want to seem to be trying to keep down any individual or group of people. The right to rise is the most glorious privilege afforded by democracy. Ugh, I don't buy that. It is the essence of freedom. Freedom, abstract. There is nothing more inspiring than to see a bright, ambitious young man with a high aspirations striving to learn and advance himself. No matter what his color, race, or creed, our hearts go out to him who struggles to improve his condition or that of his family. I will do all I can to help any individual, no matter how lowly, to help himself. Now, I don't buy a lot of this gibberish. When I was 10 years old, I taught several little Negro boys to read and write. And a year or so later, I taught to read a Negro man who worked for his family. Well, you see, these same things come back to bite you in the ass. Then the kids grow up and take the jobs of white people. And many times end up having your daughter as a girlfriend. He afterwards becomes a preacher, and that's even worse. I mention this personal reminiscence not as a great accomplishment in the educational field, but to indicate that I have ever been sympathetic to those who want to learn. We should endeavor to bring well, learning is power. You don't want your opposition to learn anything. That's Tommy speaking. We should endeavor to bring democracy to all the world so that every individual may have the right as well as the opportunity to obtain an education or to better his economic welfare. Well, perhaps I shouldn't have read the preface because this is not near as racist as the rest of the book is. But he goes through all this apologizing before he lowers the boom on him. I have no intention of hindering the work of interracial committees organized in the South to bring about a solution to racial problems. Again, I disagree. Nor is it my desire to cause dissension while the war is on, but only to meet the issue that is being forced by others who are using the wartime psychology to advance a disintegrating ideology, a philosophy of equality that can only far further the development of racial antagonisms and arouse hate. There you go. And it is not my intention to hamper our good neighbor policy when I generalize about the conditions of Latin America. It is not the individual that is criticized, but it is always nations or peoples as a whole. Lest of all of us, my idea is to oppose the furtherance of the brotherhood of man. Our feelings should be kindly toward... I'm not going to read the rest of the preface. He puts in too much bullshit. The rest of the book is really great, but this part of it sucks. He's trying to lighten the load and cause himself to... it don't work. What he's doing here does not work. You have to hit it head on like Ben Klassen did in White Man's Bible. Anyhow, that's it for today. We're getting into this book farther as we go along, but I assure you it's one of the best books I've read as far as supporting white supremacy. And that's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Thursday, and in the meantime, continue your lone wolf practices and think good consequences. Yeah, and shut your pie hole. Oh, yeah, now I played you that song about the truckers in starting the show out. Now I'm going to play you the other end about the highway patrol.
I got a star on my car and one on my chest, a gun on my hip and the right to arrest. I'm the guy who's a boss on this highway, so watch out what you're doing when you're driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm a working for the state. I'm the highway patrol. Well, you'll know me when you see me, cause my door's painted white, with my siren is screaming and my flashing red light. I work all day and I work all night just to keep a law and order, trying to do what's right. If I write you out a ticket, then you better drive slow. I'm just doing my job, I'm the highway patrol. I'm the highway patrol, the highway patrol. My hours are long and my pay is low, but I'll do my best to keep you driving slow. I'm just doing my job, I'm the highway patrol. If you're driving too fast like you shouldn't do, you can bet your boots I'm coming after you. If you want a race, then get on a racetrack. Well, if you try to run away, I'm going to bring you back. I'm here to keep all the speeders driving slow. I'm just doing my job. I'm the highway patrol. I'm the highway patrol, the highway patrol. My hours are long and my pay is low, but I'll do my best to keep you driving slow. I'm just doing my job. I'm the highway patrol. I'm just doing my job.
That one goes out to a few of our lone wolves that happen to be on the highway patrol or any other law enforcement. You know, there's not too many of you, but you're out there. And you're doing your best sometimes to help out some white people. So we know you're out there, but keep your mouth shut. Keep your mouth shut about your racial views. Don't be like these guys that join the Klan, lose their careers and everything else. Bye-bye.